Good afternoon. Really do appreciate the opportunity the congregation here has given me to participate and to share. I was very excited when Jeremy contacted me and told me that bearing burdens was my subject material. And got all excited, and I got a whole lot of material that I'm not going to be able to use just because that's the way it is with me, where I have all sorts of rabbit holes. So we'll try and stay focused. But I want to start out with a question. You ever wonder why we don't have four arms? Okay, well, I may be the only one then. But can you imagine the things you could do with four arms? It would be fantastic. We'd be able to do a gob of things. And you wouldn't have to ask for help to do them. If man were meant to fly, he would have had wings. But you certainly can fly, right? But you can't do it alone, right? So you got Leonardo da Vinci, who kind of pioneered some of the concepts involved with air flight. Then you had the Wright brothers, who threw some other textiles on a bicycle frame, basically, and voila, you have an airplane. Now you've got the Boeing company, so you've got the designers. You've got the manufacturing process with that. You've got Airbus even, maybe. You've got to have the pilot. You've got to have air traffic control. You've got baggage claim. You've got the ticket desk. You've got the flight attendants. You've got the ground crew. You've got to have maintenance. Don't get me started on the travel agencies. The idea of independence, I really want, if you don't remember anything else in the context of God and in the context of the church, there is no such thing as independence. And in the material world, there is no such thing as independence. You take any process, you talk about just getting here today. You're wearing shoes you didn't make if you walked here, but most of us drove. There's all sorts of stuff that go into everything that we do that there is absolutely no independence there because we depended on a whole lot of other people, most of them we don't even know, to see to it that we were able to accomplish the things that we were looking to accomplish. In truth, God has designed our limitations. And he's done this for several reasons, I believe. It's already been referenced, but in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, in verse 7, we have Paul referring to his thorn in the flesh. So, looking at this passage, we can see some of the reasons why God designs limitations for us. To keep me from becoming conceited, because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from becoming conceited. Three times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong. God has purposely limited our personal resources and sometimes added additional challenges to our lives, to increase our dependence on others, often him, always him, but oftentimes he wants us to connect with others. And this is a theme with him. He wants us to connect with others. I won't turn to the passage, but Job chapter 2, verses 11 and 13, we see where Job's three friends come to him after all of the calamity that has befallen him, and they weep, and they tear their clothes, and they put ash on their heads, and they sit with him for how long? 7 days. And what did they say in those 7 days? Nothing. Why is it that we always seem to feel like we have to say something when someone is carrying a horrible burden? There is sensibility sometimes in just showing up. Because sometimes there isn't anything to say. Sometimes I can't know how they're feeling. Sometimes showing up is all we need to do. I've been asked to address these three subject areas: burdens versus loads, boundaries, even though Jeremy took care of most all of that last night, I'll contextualize it for the lesson, and the benefits of burden carrying or costs of not burden carrying. First, the burdens versus load. Bearing the bearable, sharing the unbearable, and using discernment in the process. The root passage that we've been asked to look at this afternoon concerning this is found in Galatians chapter 6. And in verse 1, brothers, if anyone is caught in a transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone, and not in his neighbor. For each will have to bear his own load. So on point, I think that some of the more modern translations, this is the English Standard Version that I'm reading from today, have helped us out, because the old King James, I believe, said burden and burden, that you help bear one another's burdens and each one will shoulder his own burden. But some of the more modern translations has helped us with the understanding on this. In the Greek, as I understand it, when we talk about a boulder, a burden that we help one another bear, it's more in the sensibility of a boulder, and the load that each one of us is to shoulder is more like a rock. So, again, we're talking about things that are doable, that we're responsible for, versus things that are completely unmanageable by oneself. Well, which is which? And that's sometimes going to take a lot of discernment, and other times not a lot. Generally speaking, if you're moving residences or you're shingling a house, you are probably not doing that yourself. Probably not. But some other things require a little more discernment, because a duck isn't always a duck, right? If it looks like a duck, and it walks like a duck, and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck, right? But we can't always know what we're looking at when we're looking at a burden, an issue. Let me give you an example out of my own life. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands. Most of y'all probably taken your own shower or bath, and you've been able to adequately wash your back. Good. No hands on that, please. But my father recently had a back surgery, and it was to remove an infected cyst off of his back, out of his back tissue. But they didn't want to take the cyst out, so they basically long lanced it, drained it out, and left it open. Packed it, and they sent him home. And they said, You wash this every day for as long as it's weeping. So, my dad has balance issues and the like. He's not getting that himself. So I go over, because mom's eyesight is not that great either. Her balance is not all that great either. And we wash for a couple of weeks. Really careful around. It's really started healing up. We got it to like a little pinhole where it was just a little bit. And we agreed. I thought we'd agreed that we were at the place now that it was probably okay to just start doing routine washings, and that should be okay. There was no real risk of reinfection from the outside anyway. So a couple of weeks go by, and on a Sunday morning, I get a call, and I'm working on something on Sunday morning, and as I usually am, because I, you know. And it's my mom, and she says, "Eric, can you come over and do Dad's back?" And I'm like, I thought we were done with that. I said that. I said, have you been doing that all this time? And she said, yes, I have. But today, I can't get my arms up. It hurts too badly. Will you come over and do Dad's back? Of course I'm going to go over and do Dad's back. I'm going to say, I thought we'd already decided that we were done, but if we're not done, if you're not comfortable with that, we can continue this, because that, for most people, is not a burden. For him, it's insurmountable, and my mom's not able to work with it either. There's a lot of stuff that I can't do, though. Let me tell you about a few of those things. Getting them good meals. Now, Rachel does a pretty good job, but we've got family members in our church family that are making them meals routinely. Trips to the doctor, I'm still working. Rachel's still working. She takes off. I've taken off a little bit, but we've got retirees that routinely take my dad to his appointments. There are people who visit and send cards or messenger my mom. Those are all things that I can't do because it's Eric. When it's others, she knows that she matters. And that burden, that weight on her heart, is lifted and borne up. We need to make it easy on one another so we can know how to serve. But listen to me. And I'm going to coattail a little bit on Jason here. It's that we have got to create an environment where we can share our needs. And it's an intentional thing that we must do. We must create that environment. A loving environment to share my needs and have my faults covered, because if it's not a safe space for me to do that in, it's not going to happen. The manner we deal with one another regarding restoration here in the passage in Galatians chapter 6, gentleness, empathy, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Through ongoing interactions, the same works for bearing any kind of burden with one another. We are responsible for ourselves, but to one another. So in discernment, how do we know where those boundaries are? between a load that someone should be bearing themselves and a burden that is too heavy? Well, the good news is that we've been given some direction. And I'll look at a couple of places here. One of them is in Matthew chapter 25. And I'm going to read this only because the context is important, because I'm going to be making direct references to the context here. Then the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them, but the wise took flasks of oil with their lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy and slept. But at midnight, there was a cry, "Here is the bridegroom, come out to meet him." Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the wise answered, saying, "Since there will not be enough for us and for you, go rather to the dealers and buy for yourselves." And while they were going to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, "Lord, Lord, open to us." But he answered, "Truly, I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore, for you neither know the day nor the hour." Now, I do believe that there's a deeper meaning here, potentially. I think there is a deeper meaning regarding the Jews of Jesus' day, which applies. But I think also there is a practical lesson for us all here. So what can we learn from this? Well, they all appear to have had the same opportunity. All of the women involved had the same opportunity to have their lamp and to take some oil. Some chose prudence over expediency. And I don't know why the foolish chose to take their lamps when they knew there wasn't any oil in there. But that's what we're told happened. They took their lamps without any oil. Maybe they were running late. Maybe it appears their plan was to burden someone else with their need. They just grabbed their lamps. "Let's go. Somebody will cover for us. Somebody will share." Because it's God's people, right? This is the kingdom of heaven. They're obligated, right? They're obligated to share with me. We learn that we've only got so much to give sometimes. We learn that from this parable. Because the wise virgins didn't have for everyone. They hadn't just enough for themselves at this time. Have you ever had a long day and you're just running out of gas? Or oil? Have you ever had a season of life where you experienced limitations that were out of your control? I have. I imagine everyone has in one way or another. My folks are limited. My mom and my dad. There are a lot of things that are out of their control now. You know who designed the limitations of age? God did. So we might learn to count our days, that we might present a heart of wisdom, and to provide children an opportunity to honor their father and their mother, and an opportunity for others to legitimately serve and burden bear. It's a beautiful thing. In the spiritual context, if we don't get distracted by the hassle of the flesh. There's nothing legitimate about planning to leech off of others, though. And that's what we see in this parable. The unprepared waited to share their need. If they said something sooner, the wise could have still helped them out. The answer would have still been the same. I still only have enough to go for myself, yet you could go to the dealer and buy some yourself. If they'd even exhibited their need sooner, they would have still been okay. I think it's important for us to notice that there are no apologies here by the wise to the foolish. And regardless of when the request would have been made, the answer was always going to be the same. Discerning these circumstances requires patience, practice, wisdom, and grace. And Jesus was really good at this. In Matthew chapter 14, we have an example. Matthew chapter 14, he finds out that John the Baptist has been beheaded. And it crushes him emotionally. And even a little bit spiritually, too, because he's looking for an opportunity to get away so that he might be able to pray. Now, when Jesus heard this, that John had been beheaded, in Matthew chapter 14 and verse 13, he withdrew from there in a boat to a desolate place by himself. But when the crowds heard it, they followed him on foot from the towns. And when he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them and healed their sick. Oh dear. It looks like Jesus didn't hold the line here, doesn't it? Jesus had a personal need. He's going to try and address that need, and there's all these people that get in the way. But what Jesus did is that he used proper discernment. See, he saw that there was a legitimate need, and because his compassionate heart was so strong, some of you who exercise, why do you do cardio? Okay, it's good for your heart. So how does that benefit you? More energy, more blood flow. Do you have more stamina? Can you go for longer? You absolutely can. It increases your endurance, basically, because it makes your system more efficient. So because your system is more efficient, then you're able to go. And you're able to go for longer, and you're able to go for stronger. So you can dig down deep just one more time. That's what we see Jesus doing here. His spiritual cardio was strong. That's what we need to work towards. We need to work towards having strong, compassionate hearts for other people. And if we do work that heart in that way, we'll have enough to go the distance. We find in this passage, not only did he heal, but this is where he fed the 5,000. He sent the disciples away, dismissed the crowds. Then he went up onto the mountain and did what? Prayed. He still had needs. He still saw to it, but he still had enough left in the tank. There are times when Jesus is, well, Jesus. And there are other times when he's just like the rest of us. The benefits of and the cost of not burden bearing with one another. Great as he was, Jesus was one man with the limitations that came with that. Did Jesus have a relationship with the 5,000? No. He didn't have relationship with the 5,000. It was 5,000 people. He was one guy. He had 12 apostles. As a man, to whom was Christ sent? The lost sheep of Israel. The lost sheep of Israel. In the passage, one of the passages that he makes this plain statement in Matthew chapter 15. That was his lane. That was his lane. That was what he'd been asked to do. And he didn't get out of that lane much. He was focused because that's what Father God had tasked him with, yet sometimes he strayed out of it. And it was like he couldn't help himself. Because his compassionate heart was so big. The Syrophoenician woman there in Matthew chapter 15. I'm sorry, I was sent to the lost sheep of Israel. Yet she came and she threw herself down in front of him. And he says, ma'am, I'm sorry, it's not appropriate to feed the children's food to the dogs. And she says, yes, but the dogs get to eat the crumbs that fall from the children's table. I'm just looking for a little bit. Jesus says, I've rarely seen such great faith. Have it be done as you've asked. See, Jesus understood the limitation of his humanity. And so we see in John chapter 16 and verse 7, Jesus tells his disciples that it's to their and truly to our benefit that he go away. Because when he did, he said, I will not leave you alone, but I will what? Real loud. Send the helper. He'll send the comforter. He'll send the Holy Spirit. Now Jesus lives in the heart of every believer. He's not just one man. He's not shackled by the flesh anymore. Because he's resumed his spirit being through the power of the Holy Spirit, he can live inside of every one of us. We are Christ in the flesh. Jesus lives through us. We are told Jesus came not to destroy the law, but to what? Fulfill it. The benefit of and the cost of not burden sharing with one another hinges on this one thing. Paul told the Galatians, bear ye one another's burdens, and so what? Jesus is depending on us to fulfill his law. And it will be fulfilled. The question is will I make myself a part of that or not? So how do we get there? Many a husband says he'd die for his wife, but will he take out the trash? I'm working on it. I'm working on it. Bearing true burdens starts with building relationships through everyday service. Did Jesus not serve in the everyday? He most certainly did. And in faithfully serving every day without complaint or sin, Jesus established his worthiness to lift the unbearable burden of our sin. That's how he got there. That's how he got there. I will close with a story and a song. The story, actually, I heard it on the radio on Friday, and I had to share it. It was part of NPR's StoryCorps. And it was about a woman named Patrice Hudson who was apprehensive about online dating, as she probably should have been. Until she met a man named Byron Ball, a high school science teacher and an avid gardener. They were both single parents in their early middle age. She remembers the first time she saw a picture of him. She says in his profile he kind of had a dad bod. But I had a mom bod. And when you look deeper in the eyes behind the expression, that's where the handsome is. He had the warmest smile and really beautiful eyes, and he was very handsome. We talked every night on the phone. He was funny and sensitive, and he loved gardening. As a single mom, I did not have time for gardening, and I think it pained him to see the status of my backyard, and after saying that, she laughed. He was very kind about it. He never criticized me, but he did ask me if he could plant a few things. Over time, he did a little more and more in the yard to make it pretty. But he often did things to show he cared without being asked. He was diagnosed with cancer 8 years after we met. We married in his backyard, in his backyard garden, and in about 9 weeks after we married, he passed away. That winter, the house felt big and empty. I mean, I didn't feel much like Thanksgiving, and I didn't want a Christmas tree. That year felt gray and somber. That spring one morning, I realized, oh, there were little tulips popping up in the corner of my yard. They were very rich, lovely purple. Byron knew purple was my favorite color, so he planted those flowers. He knew he wouldn't live to see them bloom. I could not hold in the tears, because with every ounce of my being, I knew that I was loved. That didn't die with him. And he wanted me to know that. I did take up gardening. When I'm in the garden, I have had a few tears, but mostly it's joyful. I think that's what Byron would have wanted. He understood that life goes on without him, and that's okay. He showed me beyond his grave that he loved me. Byron was still getting up underneath the burden of her grief by not having left her alone in the only way he knew how. This story reminded me very much of a song I remember singing more as a child, and if you know it, please sing it with me. I come to the garden alone, where the dew is still on the roses, and the voice I hear falling on my ear, the Son of God discloses, and he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own, and the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known. If we love Jesus, we love his bride, and we will lovingly bear her burdens. Only you know the joy that Jesus provides you. He lives inside of each one of us, and he wants us to love one another deeply and bear heavy burdens with one another. That's my message. Jesus Christ loves you, whether you've accepted him or not. He had you in mind. And from beyond the grave and beyond his resurrection, he wants to live inside of you so that you can know what it is to be truly loved. True love only comes from God. John writes that God is love. If you want to know what true love is and have burdens lifted for you, we're here to help one another through life, but there is one burden that we cannot help you with. you have sin on you, there's only one heavy lifter that can handle that. And that one is Jesus Christ. If you need help with your sin problem today, make it known as we stand and sing the final selection.